Beer's Broadsides, the May 28th show. That's today. And for those of you who actually want to get access to back shows of Bathroom Spears Broadsides, you can, although it may take a little time, give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833. May be able to help you out, although our filing system is not the best. Let's hear some more of Mayor Sugar on May 23rd.
So I would like to thank very much the Chamber of Commerce for, I think, opening a big door here. I'd like to thank our Homeless Issues Task Force for making some very sound findings in support of this proposal. And I would like to thank our police department for helping us craft this solution with Homeless Resource Officer. That really, I think, is going to be the make or break element in the success of this program. So,
notice that the people that actually made this thing come onto the agenda: HUFF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, activist Bernard Klitzner, Becky Johnson, James Ney, indeed David Silva of the Coalition to End the Sleeping Ban, are not thanked. I guess he thanks Silva later. We have an incoming call.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hey, heavy guy, what's up?
Oh, it sounds like Merlin.
Right.
That's the madman who's going to set up an independent radio station.
Yep, that's what we're hoping for.
And I guess you might be calling to remind our listeners that indeed on June 3rd there's going to be a benefit concert for the homeless for safe sleeping zones at the Santa Cruz Civic, and that's going to be with Naked Ape, Dillagaff, Worm, Bricolictus, Undertow, Exploding Crustaceans, and I think David Silva may be doing some kind of a thing too. At least I know he wants you to be there. $12 in advance, $15 at the door. 8 to 12, you can give a call to 425-4499 for information. Now, having said that, what would you like to say, caller?
Well, people can get tickets to the Bona Patriot, too.
Uh-huh.
Might save a little money on that.
Now, also, I know you've been involved in, and I know we're talking about the sleeping ban, and are you listening to our show or not?
Yes.
You have some comment on that?
As far as I know, this concert's the only thing that is happening for the sleeping ban to get money.
Yeah, it should be said that even though I think there is a deadline in May for the initiative as far as getting it on the November ballot goes, but the deadline is in July for the for a special election. So if the city council craps out, which is always possible, as I said, I'm not at all sure that this matter is coming back to city council or in what form it's coming back, then there will be what I call the Silva Sleeping Ban Repeal Initiative, or as he calls it, the Safe Sleeping Zones and Decriminalization of Sleep Initiative, which actually is broader than the current proposal that's been passed by the City Council. Silva's initiative makes it legal everywhere in the industrial zones and also in the commercial zones. The places it's not legal are downtown and the beachfronts and in the residential areas, which is most of the city. And there's also no 300-foot away from a residence requirement or a move 500 feet every 3 days deal. So his is considerably more liberal, and that could go to the voters. And I should also say that the city council's proposal not only changes the law, but says that the law will come up for a vote in November. And if its proposal is not passed on the initiative ballot, that the law will revert to the current $54 if you sleep, cover up with blankets, or camp anywhere in the city, with very few exceptions. And having said that and taking up all your time, Merlin, is there anything you want to add?
Yeah, it's on a different subject, though.
Go ahead.
You know, Gail Levy, she's the president of the Cabrillo Estates Mobile Home Association.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she called me up last night, and I couldn't answer her phone call because I was too darn tired. I worked 6 days in a row, and it was my birthday.
Happy birthday, Merlin.
Thank you. I slept. I came home and slept, man. Anyway, Gail Levy is going to start running for Capitola City Council.
Uh-huh.
So she's for rent control and affordable housing.
We're talking rent control in trailers or rent control Capitola citywide?
Citywide.
You mean for apartments as well?
Yeah.
Excellent.
And
we need somebody in Santa Cruz who'd have the courage to come out for that. Wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah, she's running with someone, another woman, I forget her name, the woman's in charge of senior citizens legal aid. Who's going to be running for county supervisors?
Could be Mary Thurwalker, Claire Schwartz. I'm not sure who it is. Maybe we can get somebody else who can call in and let us know.
Well, you know, on June 10th at the Cabrillo Mobile Estates in our clubhouse, they're going to be having a meeting on this, and I'm going to invite people from Metro, and I'd also like to invite you and Becky and bring a camera down from 71, because this is going to, for the first time, let people know she's going to be running for...
And what time will this be?
At 1:30.
And where will this be?
At the Cabrillo Estates Mobile Home Clubhouse. It's not open to the public.
I see. Well, you should probably talk about this off-air, then.
Well, it's okay, because, I mean, you know, not open to the public. I'm letting people know on-air.
I see.
But that we want you to come, Robert, and bring Becky down Channel 71 cameras so she can officially say that she's running for city council member. I guess she's running against, who is it?
Not sure. I'll pass it on to Becky, and I know that you guys have been engaging in your own struggle. Any updates on what's happening in the mobile home parks in Capitola?
Well, the owner of this park, I'm not going to mention his name, but apparently what Gil told me was he was, he couldn't buy a mobile home here with your realtor. He had to go through his realtor. So she had lawyers from Southern California, and I think it was the district attorney's office in Santa Cruz called him up and said, hey, you know this is illegal, what you're doing there? Oh, no, he didn't know that. He says he didn't know that.
What was illegal?
Only going through his realtor if you want to buy a mobile home.
Oh, so you have to, I see, if you want to get on the property and buy a mobile home, you have to go through his lawyer?
His realtor.
His realtor,
I see. Yeah, which is like, you know, discrimination. She's not doing that anymore.
Let me hope that we can cover this topic on a future show. I'm going to rush back to the sleeping van so we can finish because we're beginning to run out of time.
You got any more tickets to give away to the people?
You know, I have no more tickets at the time, but do you?
I have tickets, but they're already, like, for Bill Grampy's Dance and the Maritime Hall, because, you know, I try and promote the local band.
Actually, we have a few of those tickets that you so generously left. I should say David Silva left here. I'm not sure it was you or
Kid
him.
Mark might have some.
So there will be, you know, this concert is coming up on June 3rd. It will help fund the Sleeping Ban Repeal Initiative if it is necessary, if the Sleeping Ban does not get dumped in the industrial zones, as we're hoping it will on June 13th. And actually, I think also David's is a much better initiative if you consider the situation for people who aren't in vehicles, because it provides a much larger area for them to kind of keep a low profile, which is what they're going to need to do. So
we're hoping that Ralph Nader shows up.
And right, Ralph Nader, David spoke about this, I guess, a show or two ago, is due to show. And I guess that's it from my end. Anything more from yours?
No, thank you, Robert.
Thanks, Merlin.
All right, hope to see you.
And now, Sugar returns.
There are other, I hope I haven't left out any of the significant particulars that are part of this proposal. There are copies of it by the entrance. Tim Fitzmaurice is the co-sponsor of this legislation, and I think he might have a few words to say.
Well, I'll keep it brief because I assume there'll be plenty of people that want to speak to this.
Councilmember Tim Fitzmaurice.
Get started on the conversation. What's important to me is that we're trying to address something that hasn't been addressed in 36 years, which is essentially the definition of a word, and the word has to do with sleep.
Actually, I don't think Councilmember Fitzmaurice is correct. The word sleep only entered the Santa Cruz ordinance structure in 1978 in the current draconian or totalitarian form that it now is. Prior to 1978, it was illegal to sleep in a vehicle, and it was illegal to sleep on certain bits of unimproved property, but there was no citywide ban on sleeping in front yards, in property that was visible from the street but private, on public property. There was no general ban on sleeping, just in vehicles and on the beaches as well. So it was 1978, and I correct this in order to give... To clarify that Fitzmaurice's research, though the man is an academic and presumably a professor who knows how to do research, didn't happen through, for example, contacting those of us who actually have the history, and he can check our sources, but we certainly have done the research. None of these council members contacted HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. They apparently were upset by the protests that we did over the years that actually made them consider this in the first place. So it's kind of ironic. But again, Tim Fitzmaurice speaks on the issue, and I commended him for putting his name on the staff report and then indeed voting. It was his vote and Catherine Byers that made sure this proposal got the 4-3 or 4-2 with Rutkin missing majority that it got last Tuesday. Whether they will hold the line when the Rutkin begins to unearth his when he speaks on the issue is it something to be seen. Also, we have, of course, today's editorial in the Santa Cruz Urinal, also known as the Santa Cruz Sentinel, for those who read such things. Sunday Sentinel has a long editorial, Homelessness Gets Official Sanction. The editorial is riddled with errors, full of the usual prejudice against homeless people, and I'm hoping that someone's going to do a rebuttal to it, though with the Sentinel it's hardly news that they're full of errors, and I'm not even going to go into all the errors because I think it's important to talk about what's really happening, not spend one's time trying to correct the opinion on the air, because most of you who have been following this show know we're told what the proposal was about. I've been discussing it. Mayor Sugar has been speaking about it. And the Sentinel, of course, wants to keep the old sleeping ban intact, as well as the camping ordinance intact. It continues to confuse the camping ban with the sleeping ban. Sleeping means sleeping, camping means setting up a tent. The camping ban isn't touched under the current proposal. And let's hear more from Tim Fitzmaurice.
The word has to do with whether or not we can legislate something as difficult to define and as necessary as that particular activity. I don't think this is necessarily about doing better in terms of the law, the application of the law. The law has been applied rather well since we've been here. We haven't seen that many citations and those kinds of things, so we don't feel that that's a particular issue that we're dealing with by doing this. What we're doing is trying to come up with a new way of looking at a particular word that was used in what I consider to be a rather egregious fashion.
Now, the idea that a word somehow is the problem rather than police misconduct or basic homeless civil rights, I think, is way off base. But it looks like Fitzmaurice is trying to stick to his area of expertise, which has to do with the dictionary and academic arena. And I guess in a way this is safe, because if you consider his position on something like the Dolphin Lee, where he's prepared to evict hundreds of people, and we're going to talk about this a little later in the show, supposedly to provide affordable housing for some of them, a victim from housing that is currently affordable for all of them, to provide better housing affordable for some of them, shows you the depth and profundity of his analysis. Similarly here, he doesn't understand that one of the main problems with the current sleeping ban is it does provide the police with an opportunity to harass, search, ID, terrorize, and even deport people that it doesn't like. And it doesn't have to issue a single ticket to do it. All it has to do is threaten to issue a ticket. And people are not going to sit there and say, oh, go ahead, issue me a ticket. They want to get the hell out of there and away from the police. And therefore, they will do what the police ask them. And the police have an excuse, because if it's illegal to sleep after 11 o'clock at night, if that's a crime, then anybody who's caught in a sleeping bag under those circumstances is under suspicion. There is reasonable suspicion that they are committing a crime. If there is reasonable suspicion you are committing a crime, police can interrogate you. In fact, we would even say there is probable cause to believe you're committing a crime. In that case, the police can ticket you, they can hold you, they can search your possessions and your belongings. And it becomes a form of stripping people of their dignity and their basic human rights. And I'm afraid Fitzmaurice still hasn't really caught up with Sugar and Crone, who in 1998, although Fitzmaurice voted for it in December, passed the sleeping is a basic human right and a human need, and asked the police at that time to stop issuing tickets unless there were a genuine health and safety concern. Actually, that was a proposal by Sugar. It didn't quite make the vote because Fitzmaurice and Byers voted against it at that time. Instead, I guess the proposal ended up being ticket only on warning and after a complaint, generally speaking. And police have not been doing that with real regularity. And indeed, they've been using the camping ban, the law against setting up a campsite, which involves camping equipment and using a piece of property for a long period of time, or at least overnight, staying there with the intention to remain overnight and set up a campsite, even when someone has just laid down a sleeping bag to sleep. And I've gotten at least two or three tickets brought to me where I am persuaded, based on the accounts I've heard from the folks involved, that they weren't anywhere setting up a campsite in back of a lawyer's office where they were trying to just grab a, you know, a nap. Nor were they warned. They didn't get a warning. They weren't told to move to a safe zone. Of course, there are no safe zones, but they weren't told to move on. And they weren't told there was a complaint. Instead, the police officer came in and used Section C, which will continue to remain in force. There will continue to be a camping ban even after June 13th, second reading, even after July 13th, when I presume the measure will go into effect, because that's a month after its final reading. There will still be a camping ordinance in place, and the police can still misuse it. They can still say, oh, you were camping, you weren't sleeping, there was a permanent campsite. But hopefully they will be more closely scrutinized because they will have to prove it was a campsite. Now, in court, what that means is the cop just saying, oh, he said he was going to stay there overnight. That constitutes a campsite, and whether it's Referee Mulligan, the police officer's friend, or Judge Art Danner, the former DA who doesn't mind arresting people and taking them to trial, but when himself is picked up drunk driving and smashes into someone, gets off very quickly, as he did in 1987 or 88, he's now one of our judges, and he's ruling the roost. These judges apparently just, whatever the police officers say, go. You know, perjury by the police is unthinkable from these judges. So we're going to have a similar problem even with the new ordinance. But with the new ordinance, hopefully there will be a new public opinion, there will be a new political view, and maybe these prosecutors, these police, will be less likely to push this kind of stuff. That's our hope. Now, we can get some indication as to whether this is happening now by looking at how people are treated. If you've been ticketed for sleeping, or if you've been harassed, that's more likely, for sleeping, I want to know about it. I want you to call 423-HUFF, 423-4833. If you have a friend who this has happened to, or if you've heard of it happening, please give a call to 423-4833 and just leave a recorded message saying, as far as I know, this is what happened to this sort of a person. You don't have to leave any names unless you want to. You don't even have to have a return phone number. Just call in and keep us advised as to what's happening. We need to know if police are actually responding, because if Belcher can't control his own department now, it's not necessarily that he's going to be able to control his department later. I mean, we see now the council's clear intention, supposedly, of repealing the sleeping ban sections of the camping ordinance in some parts of town. The police department is not going to fall in line with the program now. There's no indication that they're going to fall in line with it later. So let's learn now rather than later, so we can mount the kind of monitoring and protest we need to make sure that people do get their basic rights secured here. I mean, believe me, you can't trust city council, you can't trust the police department, you can't trust us, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. People you can trust are yourselves, and you have to go out there and do it. And I actually am suggesting that people, whether it be out at the Homeless Services Center, whether it be on the streets, whether it be as a vehicular association, organize themselves. And I'd be happy to provide whatever documentation I can to be helpful. And again, my number is 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Now, you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, and we are listening to part of the City Council debate on May 23rd. We aren't going to be able to hear all of it because we're, again, running up against the time pressure, and there are other things I want to do on this show. I kind of hope to have some people from the Dolphin and Lee Apartments talking about the proposed Dolphin Lee demolition plan. We've talked about this before. Affordable housing hoax, as I call it, by Mercy Charities Housing, done with the collusion of City Council that apparently would prefer to destroy existing affordable housing rather than build on the sacrosanct land of Charles Canfield of the Seaside Company. Tenants are not taking this lightly. They've stood up in an organization called Residentes Unidos, and 90% of them have signed, actually more than that, a statement saying, we're not going to move, we don't want your project, we want Mercy Charities kicked out of this whole business, and if you're going to try any such project, we demand relocation and return guarantees. If you're saying you're going to relocate us to affordable housing, tear down our houses, and then 2 or 3 years down the road, or 1 or 2 years down the road, move us back in, you damn well better sign on the dotted line before you do so and guarantee every one of us a place back in the housing, because you're destroying our houses. We have an incoming call.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hello, is Nicolara there?
You're on Free Radio Santa Cruz?
Sorry, I reached the wrong number.
Sorry about that.
Thanks.
Well, don't be afraid if you've got if she got the wrong number. You can get the right number, and that's 427-3772, and Let's continue now with the sleeping ban discussion, and then we're going to be rolling into the latest updates on the fight by Residentes Unidos to save their homes and stop the city council's redevelop-to-death scam, is what it really is.
Improve the situation for a segment of the community, and I think reflect, as Keith has suggested, reflect the sort of the common sense of the community, as echoed by the chamber, but also by the homeless issue task force, which went through a long period of hearings on the matter, and try to approach this issue in a new way, and to assert what we think our values are with respect to this particular issue. And that's what we're trying to do. In a sense, we're trying to apply some imagination to something that was rather unimaginatively done, in my view, during the years ago. I don't know, I think it's going to require the best efforts of a variety of people to make sure that this kind of thing will work and that we're going to actually help the people that are most in need of help in this particular situation. I don't have a whole lot more to add than that, except that I'm interested in what the public has to contribute to this particular discussion. We have our own conversations and our own feelings about how best to present this to the world and how best to what best mechanisms to apply. I hope people be specific about what their concerns are. It is my current belief that it's best if we bring forward a moratorium on the issue at this particular moment, and then bring it to the voters in some compelling and respectable form in November, and allow the voters to look at it with their best judgment. That's my particular position right now, but I'm more than happy to hear what people think on this matter. I think it's important. It's divided the community to some extent, and I think we're divided over something that we really shouldn't be divided over, that it's really a failure of imagination, not necessarily a failure of people moving, I think, it toward the same goal, which is to assist people and to integrate people into our community. I want to say one other thing, and that's that sometimes people say to me, why do you spend so much time on issues like this and not on something else? I spend I think I spend more than a majority of my time on affordable housing for poor people in this community. I think I spend unimaginable amounts of time on that. Trying to figure out ways to create permanent affordable housing in this community for poor and working people is probably the majority of time that I spend, hour by hour, week by week. The other is the senior housing, and I think that's a great peril, great risk with the booming economy. I think that a lot of our senior housing, retirement housing, people on fixed incomes are in jeopardy unless we address that risk day after day and without relenting.
It would be nice if we actually started to address that risk instead of throwing out a bunch of people, including seniors, at the Dolphin and Lee Apartments with no guarantees they're going to come back. Fitzmaurice sits on the Relocation Committee and will, in fact, be returning on Tuesday when that Relocation Committee, which is open to the public, will be going to meet again 200 Raymond Street at 6:30 in the evening. That's in the Beach Flats Community Trailer. Fitzmaurice has refused to bring up the issue at City Council of guarantees of return and relocation. He's refused to bring up rent control. He is a talking head, as far as I'm concerned, on these issues. And the fact that he has turned the corner on this issue in terms of the sleeping ban, it's positive insofar as at least he's not voting against it. But I think primarily the reason for that is that Councilmember Byers changed her mind, and, Tim with his little red wagon comes running after. I'm sorry, that's the bottom line for me. I don't hear any intelligent, educated response to all this except some academic gobbledygook about an imaginative use of words, and let's clarify the words and the language, and I don't particularly think that's a strong basis for this kind of position. I'm glad he takes the position he does. We have an incoming call.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, this is David.
Hi, David. I'm attacking your man, Tim, here.
I can't hear your radio right now. I heard it when I was in the car, but I can't hear it here at home right now.
Go for it.
Anyway, just calling, hoping that every single DJ in Free Radio this weekend, while this 3-day weekend, while we have people from San Jose in town who could possibly be buying tickets or plugging the show.
We've already, of course, mentioned the June 3rd Safe Sleeping Zones Benefit.
Safe Sleeping Zones Benefit concert at the Civic Auditorium. And you still got the flyer there up visible for everybody?
We sure do.
Okay, I just want to make sure the flyer's still up there.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I'm doing is just bugging.
Let me just ask you,
promoting.
David, have you heard any new... I know that Ken Cole, the Homeless Services Center, has been hopeful of... He's kind of the guy that Keith Sugar threw all his... Set up a homeless service officer, get the porta-potties going, case manage,
well,
get the registration...
Well, the homeless service officer is a police officer, but yeah.
Right, but he said...
He threw a lot of the programming type stuff.
He threw that at Ken Cole. Have you talked to Ken, or do you have any sense as to whether what's going on with that stuff?
Well, I have talked to Ken, and I think he was under the impression that his board would prefer that, you know, they go with more with the maximal, you know, programming kind of approach. Then he went back to his board, and when he talked to him, he said, no, that we really agree with you, Ken. It should be more the minimal, you know, it's just an open, safe from tickets zone,
mm-hmm.
not a, you know, a registration, you know, heavy outreach, heavy controlled kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where it stands right now. But that's all still going back and forth. He has a lot of you know, business and interests on his board that he has to deal with. And he has to balance them. I don't think they're interested in increasing their budget in a major outreach program. It is the safe sleeping zones are an opportunity for people to get more into transitional programming because they're being left alone by police, and so it is an opportunity for them to actually. Get to work the next day without having lost.
It's also an opportunity for people to do outreach because then they don't have to hide from people.
Right.
But my concern, as I've mentioned on the show earlier, is that somehow Sugar wants to delay this program past June 13th until he's got all these registration schemes
and case management schemes lined up.
I
think I pretty much convinced him that, you know, when you have a person sleeping in a vehicle, they have a registered car, the driver's license is the registration. The DMV has already taken care of that for us.
Mm-hmm.
If police want to go around and take people's license numbers down, they know who are in the zones and they can find out who's supposed to be in the zones.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's no big deal. We don't need to create a registration program. I think I've got Keith pretty much convinced about that.
You had a talk with him after the May 23rd meeting.
Yes, I have. And we're also talking about putting some call boxes out there. You know, there was the Hernandez thing. Oh, you know, the hate crimes. You know, you're just creating a target. It's really interesting. Hernandez wants to have it both ways. When we were talking about having it originally, you know, the week before they came up with this final version of the proposal, we had the community commercial corridor included. Hernandez was around town, you know, threatening Mike Schmidt of the Chamber of Commerce and making all these threats about, you know, the residents that live above mom and pop stores, also the community commercial corridor, making all this sort of stuff that he was so concerned, you know, about these people. Now that it's in the industrial zones, all of a sudden now he's concerned about the rights of the corporations that have these big chunks of property out there. So he doesn't seem to be want to play on with a fair deck. And if you read the Sentinel editorial this morning, obviously they don't want to play with a fair deck.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to try to see if I can get a counterpoint. You know, if they'll let me do a rebuttal to that, I think I can pretty much match them. I'm just tell Honig, you know, read your own reporters. You know, read your own reporters, and you should be able to know the difference. If they are doing this much fear mongering this early, then obviously they are. I think they're afraid that they're gonna lose big on this one.
What about their idea that and this has been echoed by some activists who said it might be better for council to simply pass this without putting it on the ballot, and hope for a more progressive council next time without entrenching it. What do you think?
Well, I think morally, the sections A through C, which is, you know, sleeping is not camping. That part, the decriminalization of sleep part, for sure, you know, they need to rise to the courage to do what, you know, we haven't been able to get the courts yet to do.
Does that mean put it on the ballot or not?
No, not put it on the ballot. To just say, you know, sleeping is not camping.
Mm-hmm.
My God, for God's sakes, you know, sleeping cannot become a crime.
Mm-hmm.
And then the issue of the zones, whether or not this particular zone that they've, you know, pared down to, or whether there's some other alternative solution, maybe the voters want to say, okay, we'll go with this zones as your solution to this decriminalization of sleep. But really, you know, zones should be a solution to decriminalization of camping in reality.
Mm-hmm.
We just made this great grand compromise, and we've given up just about everything that we could give up, and still they're not satisfied. So, you know...
It doesn't really help camping either, because people can't put up a tent any of those zones.
That's what I'm saying. I'm saying it should have been that.
Right.
That's what it should have been. That should have been a safe camping areas in which camping grounds could have been established within those areas.
Now, David,
we didn't do any of that. What we did is we negotiated a basic human right, which shouldn't even be negotiable.
Right. So I that's an interesting distinction you're making. Now, the next day on May 24th, after this May 23rd hearing, you attended the discussions of the Homeless Issues Task Force's final report, and we had hoped there would be some talk about camping and the need to set up camping zones or campgrounds. What did you find came out of that meeting?
I find what came out of that meeting is what you usually get when you deal with county bureaucrats. You have the most corrupt individuals that steal from the people of Santa Cruz and line their pockets in the most corrupt way of one of the most corrupt counties in the state of California. And when the citizens of the county of Santa Cruz wake up, when they make the right wing and the left wing both make complaints about planning, they make complaints about administration, the union complaints about having its health funds stolen from these administrators, they ought to wake up that what they do is they do double speak and they give us these numbers that mean absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing. We sat there and had to endure 3 hours of blatant blah, blah, nothing.
That was, of course, the county putting its little presentation about what they call...
The sheriff wasn't present.
They call it the continuum of care. We call it the continuum of carelessness, and they didn't even have a supervisor there, right?
They didn't even have any kind of numbers to compare with. They couldn't tell us what percentage of the problem they were taking care of. They didn't even make distinguish half the time between homelessness and just plain old aid. It was a horrible, miserable, fraudulent report.
Now, at that meeting we had...
The county should be ashamed. The county should be really held to task for this.
And no mayors came to that meeting, even though they were invited, right?
No mayors, no county board of supervisors. They're all invited. Instead, they sent their bureaucrats. The very bureaucrats are being paid, you know, $200,000, $180,000 to steal from the citizens of the Santa Cruz County. The very administrators.
You know that the county, of course, has its own, in fact, de facto sleeping ban on all county property. It's, I guess, right now somewhat easier if you're on county private property. There aren't the same kinds of restrictions, but there are generally a ban on sleeping in the county. What do you think, and you've encouraged people to go to county board of supervisors meetings to speak out strongly against this.
Yeah, well, I think very soon we will be having a repeal of the Watsonville sleeping ban. I think as soon as we finish that, we really ought to get onto the business of really getting the county in line, because until the county gives relief of some kind of a place where people can go that are homeless and still stay close to their family and friends and still stay to the community that they belong to, you know, until the county starts giving that kind of relief, you know, it's going to be more and more impossible for the city to do anything. I know that sounds like the Cynthia Matthews line, but there's a lot of truth to it.
Mm-hmm. Now, what about, what's your final estimation about this June 13th meeting? A lot of us have been rather pessimistic, thinking that this second reading is by no means certain of the partial sleeping ban repeal here in the city. What's your reading?
Well, I think it's absolutely certain that we'll get the vote. What I think is we need to really press on and we need to focus on is that they divide the question. They divide the question between decriminalization of sleep and this particular pared-down, almost inoperable very restricted zone.
So in other words, you're going to suggest, and I'll put this in other words, that the sleeping as a right be essentially passed, period, by the city council, and that the zones maybe be put on the ballot?
Right. Yeah, if they want something to be tested, something that people can actually vote on, is up or down. Maybe they can put an alternative, say, do you want to do something else? Or do you prefer the camping and sleeping bans version, which is, you know, the industrial zones and the community commercial corridor. Mm-hmm. So migrants and people without cars have a little bit of space. Give some people. You know, people know how to practice democracy if you give them a chance. But you know, we've become less and less and less a democratic nation. You know, it's more and more. It's just black and white democracy. Yes or no, up or down, winner take all. You know, we've got to learn how to start practicing democracy. And if this council isn't going to start getting allowing the citizens of Santa Cruz to practice democracy when they go to the polls, which council is?
Did you see democracy at Wednesday's afternoon session where 50 or 60 people were forced to wait 3 hours to give 2 minutes of public testimony?
I thought the whole thing was very, very bad form, but I didn't know what to expect in the first place, so I didn't know what would have been good for him. I think it was, like I said, what we got was just hours and hours of county bureaucrats giving us very little information that was useful. It was information that you know, is very good gloss.
And you heard nothing from the city criticizing. What did we hear from the city counterpointing that?
Well, I think the best criticism came from Michael Hernandez.
And can you remind us what that was?
He says, the Board of Supervisors has insulted the city of Santa Cruz by sending us, and he apologized to Susan Mariel, I don't know why, for sending us your administrators who can't make policy decisions when we are basically talking about basic policy decisions here. And all they can do is they can give us numbers and they can't make any decisions. How can we sit down and make decisions with the county if you don't give us the decision makers?
Do you think that a protest...
That was a very valid criticism.
Do you think that a protest at the next Board of Supervisors meeting, which I assume would be the first Tuesday in June, would be successful in getting supervisors to get to the June 13th meeting? Because, as you know, it's not just a return of the sleeping ban repeal on June 13th at City Council. It's also the return of the Homeless Issues Task Force, which Christopher Crone moved to have continued and discussed on an item-by-item...
Thank God for Christopher
item-by-item basis.
Alertness.
Right. Well, I was a little concerned that he was alert only, you know, at the end of the meeting. If he'd been alert at the beginning, it might have been better. You know.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think any of us really knew how much we were in store for. I've worked for the county, and I've worked, you know, struggled with the county in the past, so I know what you know, horrible, horrible bureaucrats they are. I know there's a lot of good working people that are in this, caught up in that system that want to work and want to try to help people, and they are prevented from doing so. Middle management is prevented from doing what their frontline workers advise them is the best way to handle problems because of upper management's blindness, complete arrogant aloofness, and detachment from reality.
Now, you worked for the county for a number of years.
Yeah, right? We're 5 years in welfare in Fresno, 5 years in welfare in Santa Cruz.
Can you sum up, can you give us some sense of what happened there that you think bears on your experience recently?
Basically, you know, someone that's disabled comes in to apply for food stamps. What an eligibility worker is practically trained by a supervisor, although this is against the law federally. They tell that person, oh, you're on Social Security, you're only going to get $10 worth of food stamps. You shouldn't apply. That's going to be too much grief for you. We're just going to give you all kinds of trouble for your $10 worth of food stamps. And that person goes away discouraged. The reality is that person may only get $10 worth of food stamps on a regular basis, but any time they have any kind of outstanding medical expenses of their own, they can report those medical expenses and get an increase in food stamps to help compensate for that. So they're not told that. Homeless people are told, you have to have a place where we can't give you food stamps. Or if they finally insist, then they can get food stamps. But there's all kinds of like lies being told to applicants. And if people would just look at the denials, the amount of denials that this county makes is outrageous. And they get brownie points. They get good ratings from the state for having so many denials. By having so many denials, they're being considered a performing the job. If the state and the feds were to really come and investigate the kind of denials that they're making, this city is denying money that would go to welfare recipients, people that rightfully should be receiving funds. That money is denied them because it doesn't increase their salaries. It doesn't increase administrative budget. It only increases the amount of money that flows to the people that need it, and they have to work harder to do that. This case, this county, these workers have the smallest caseload of any county in the country. There's no county that has such small caseloads. Other counties are dealing with large caseloads, and they are delivering money and getting that money into the people's hands and getting those food stamps to the people's hands. This county is refusing to do that. Instead, they're getting brownie points so they can have high salaried positions in the HRA, and it's disgusting and it's a shame.
Skipping quickly to the city budget, David, since that's coming up, I guess, within a few weeks for a final analysis and vote, can you give us any indication of what areas you think the public should be pressuring the city council on that issue?
On which issue,
Ron? The city budget.
Oh, gee, I haven't attended any of the city budget sessions. I don't know what's balancing. Only thing I heard was that there was a big fight between the chief of police and Tim Fitzmaurice, because Tim Fitzmaurice just absolutely insisted that, you know, that the police department from now on start having moderate-sized cars instead of these huge LTDs.
And or at least two of them.
Yeah, well, from now on.
Right.
And then in over the long haul, that's going to mean hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars, and I think that money should be targeted for social services. That's all I can say.
We've been talking to David Silva of the campaign to
end the sleeping ban.
End the sleeping ban.
And the concert for a hell of a good time.
Hey, give a call.
June 3rd. Yeah, you can get tickets now at Poet and Patriot, and you can get Streetlight Records. We didn't realize Streetlight Records didn't have any until this week, but they have them now.
Sounds good, David.
Okay.
Thank you.
And, of course, for those who want to circulate petitions, you can still give a call and help out with that, although... I give a call to 423-HUFF, and we'll put you in touch with David Silva and the campaign.
Sorry.
I'm calling with a couple of things, but I'm calling specifically to agree with David Silva, who just spoke.
Mm-hmm.
It is absolutely true what he says about this county being the most corrupt in the state, and about the social services, County Emmeline, that the whole department with food stamps, with all the services that the good taxpayers of the state of California are, and the country, are providing for the people of Santa Cruz. They are here, the representatives, the so-called workers for the people, are there specifically to deny everybody. They did this with me.
Now, you're a disabled woman.
I'm a disabled woman, and I need 24-hour care if I expect to not be in a nursing home.
And what is your disability?
Oh, gosh.
just very briefly.
I have spinal cord compression.
You're in a wheelchair, and it's painful for you to move at all, right?
Yeah, I have, in the neck I have it, so I have there's 6 discs that are 4 in the neck and 2 in the lumbar.
Don't let me ask you to go into the details.
Thank you.
Go ahead with what you were saying, though.
Well, I experienced going to the county a number of years ago when I was really in dire need of help, and my partner and caregiver, when I asked for these services, is there anything? They said no. And Robert said, are you sure there is nothing for a person like her? There is no help for this person. Guy looked around the room, none that I know of.
You're referring to Robert, your partner.
Yes, and we were down at County Emmeline where the intake people, you know. Well, we went back again another time, asked another person, please, is there anything for us? No, nothing I know of. Well, a couple of years later, thanks to the Community Action Board, I found out that there is. And I went down and I applied for it. Promptly got denied because I'm homeless. Why am I homeless? Because I had no one to take care of me and no money for my partner to take care of me. He had to stay home and take care of me. Couldn't go to work. I was injured on the job dealing with a workers' comp injury. And this was like a catastrophic. One minute I was fine, the next minute totally disabled. And after a couple of years of finding out that, yeah, there are these services, go down and get them, they promptly denied me because I was homeless. Went to court 3 cases, judge ruled in my favor, Department of Social Services came in and stamped void on every single one of his pages on his decision. We won on appeal. It's a precedent now that it doesn't matter if you're homeless or not. If you need the help, you're entitled to it.
Is there a place in the law library? Is there a reference to this decision that people could know about?
I don't know. It wouldn't be in there yet because it's real new. You can call Protection and Advocacy. Their number is 800-772-5746. It is deplorable. We had the judge call us and say he was outraged that they did this to him, that they overstepped him. According to Protection of Advocacy, yes, David Silver is right. This county is the most corrupt in the state of California. They're being investigated right now. I have a few telephone numbers I'd like to give out to everyone who is listening. Please, you guys, take a pencil and paper. Even if you think this doesn't apply to you, I'm sure in your travels you're going to come across somebody that needs this help. One of them is the National Coalition for Homeless Veterans. This is a direct line to them. You know that a great many of our homeless people are veterans. 40% of them served in Vietnam. One number is 1-800-VET, V-E-T, HELP, H-E-L-P, or 1-888-233-8582. That's 1-800-VET-HELP or 1-888-233-8582. Another number is for the Americans with Disabilities Administration, 1-800-514-0301. I encourage anybody who themselves, these are all free numbers, who themselves is a disabled person to contact these people, tell them what's happening to them if they're homeless and disabled. And I encourage anyone who knows of someone who is disabled, who you feel is getting, pardon my expression, screwed here in Santa Cruz because what's reaching the rest of the country isn't getting to us here? Please call these numbers and report it. They're there for us.
Robert, you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Yeah, hi, Robert. This is Robert. Anybody who has been to Emmeline and feels that they have a case and a need for assistance and did not get that assistance and got a denial instead, if you can pass their number on to me or a way to get for them to get in touch with me, I will help them out and turn them on to the protection and advocacy people or whatever laws there are that would enable them to get their assistance, because people are being denied wholesale.
So Robert and Eleanor can be reached by getting in touch with HUF, Homeless
yes,
United for Friendship and Freedom.
Yeah, we listen to the show all the time, and if you say that you have someone, or if you give us a call, you have someone, we'll pass along the proper rules, the proper laws,
procedures,
and
help
proper
them.
People that maybe someone can do something for them, because they're being denied improperly. Even though these people have a silver tongue, they seem to have all their words together. They're talking bullshit. We ourselves cut right through. And now I'm getting paid to take care of Eleanor, which is the way it should have been right from the start. So, and we're going after them for all their lies, too. There'll be more court cases, whole statewide court cases in which Eleanor